So I'm going to have all those verses on my overhead slides. And on those verses, there's going to be an underlined word, and that's the word you're looking for as you're trying to complete those puzzles. So hopefully that will help you to keep up, and hopefully it will help you to get more out of the things we've prepared to talk about today. And I want to say that I'm grateful for the opportunity to be with you while Sammy's on, I guess this is a missionary journey Sammy's on, down in Florida. I'm supposed to have the good fortune, I hope, to preach in Ardmore tonight, which is the little church there is, well, you could hit a golf ball and hit the state line of Tennessee. Well, Van could hit a golf ball and hit the state line of Tennessee. I couldn't. But it's right on the state line of Alabama and Tennessee. And so when I was asked, could I be here Sunday morning, and I was thinking I'm preaching up there, I thought, well, yeah, that's 2.5 hours. That's not a big deal. I can do that. And that's the convenience of the age we live in. You know, 100 years ago, nobody would have said, yeah, I can preach, you know, near Birmingham Sunday morning and near Tennessee Sunday night. But we had it so convenient. We had it so easy. And, you know, I just get up and I thought, well, I'll see if there's an easier route. So, you know, directions to Black Creek Church of Christ, you know. And I said, which one? I didn't know there was a second one. There is another one. It's in Florida. So I want the one on Alliance Road. So it, you know, gives me about 4 options. You know, this route may be the fastest and save you 2 minutes, and so I'll go that way. And so I went through a part of Inslee that I'll never go through again. I'll take a different route home. It'll be worth the extra 2 minutes. I'm glad I survived that. But I was glad to make it down here, and I'm glad to be with you, and hopefully I'll have a safe trip back, and hopefully Sammy will have a safe trip back to be with you again. But, you know, we have all these conveniences. We have all these things, all these possessions, that make our lives so easy. I mean, we have it so good, so much better than so many other people in the world. I was reading something the other day that if you make more than $2 a day, then you're better off than a third of the world's population. And I thought, wow, we make a lot more than $2 a day around here, don't we? You know, minimum wage is, I don't know, $8 an hour or something like that. You just think about how much we have in life. And so that's what I want to talk about tonight. As we go through life, we accumulate all these possessions, all these different things, and when we get to the end of life, we think, well, I'll just pass the inheritance. You know, you may have heard an inheritance sermon before, maybe it's something about a spiritual inheritance, and that's not what this is. We're going to talk about worldly possessions this morning and worldly things, and we talk about passing the inheritance. And there are things that are left behind when we leave this earth. 1 Timothy 6 and verse 7. But we brought nothing into the world, and we can take nothing out of it. Psalm 49 and verse 10. For all can see that the wise die, that the foolish and the senseless also perish, leaving their wealth to others. We didn't bring anything into this world, and when we leave this world, we're not taking anything with us. Now, not all cultures believe that. Not all people believe that. You know, there are people who've made their living raiding graves, you know, tomb raiders. Because people die and they think they're going to take their treasure with them, and they want the treasure buried with them. And once they're dead and gone, that treasure's still here. And there are people who go around looking, digging up graves, trying to find treasure. You know, there used to be some cultures that when a person would die, they would put coins on their eyes to, you know, to pay the boat keeper or whoever to carry them to the you know, eternity, the next world, whatever it was. So they thought they were taking those coins with them. But if you dug up that body or those remains today, those 2 coins are still sitting there. And it's because we can't take anything with us. We brought nothing into this world. When we leave this world, we're not taking anything with us. So who's going to inherit these things? You know, this is a question that Jesus asked or responded with when the man comes to him in verse 13, which I don't have on the overhead. Jesus, tell my brother to split the inheritance with me. You know, somebody, I guess, has died and left this man. I don't know if it's his parents or, you know, aunts and uncle, whoever it is, has left this inheritance, and the brother's not splitting. And Jesus, tell this guy to split the inheritance with me. Tell my brother to split the inheritance, what's been left behind. And so Jesus, in response, tells this parable about this man. We get down to verse 20, and he says, the NIV says, then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? You know, different translations say it different ways. The Living Translation says, then who will get everything you worked for? The King James said, who shall those things be which thou hast provided? Basically, Who's getting the inheritance? What's going to happen to the inheritance? And so that's what I would like for us to think about a little bit this morning. And a couple of things happened when the idea for this sermon came to me. I got two small kids, and you know, several months ago, Brooke comes to me and says, "Hey, we gotta up our life insurance in case something happens to me or you." And she said, "And we gotta sit down, we gotta meet with a lawyer and write out a will in case something happens. So, you know, who's gonna get the kids and the money and the possessions or whatever that we leave behind? You know, this inheritance." And so, you know, we sit down and start looking over insurance papers, and she said, "You know, this is how much insurance we need on you. So are you moving to Hawaii when I die or something? We don't need that much. Like, that's enough that the green beans, I won't eat them if you fix them. I don't know what you're going to do to me." But she said, "No, this is what it's going to take to get through life, get kids to college and pay for weddings and, you know, everything that goes along with that. This is what we're going to have." And so, you know, we have to sign these papers, and then we have to sit down with a lawyer, and who's going to get all these things if something happens to me or to her or to both of us? You know, what's going to happen with the kids, and who's going to raise them? And so I had that going on in life. And then at the same time, we were working on this house on Arlington Road in Athens, Alabama. And it was just a modest house. It wasn't anything, you know, special, just a middle-class home. Belonged to a man and woman named Jones. I never met them. Mr. and Ms. Jones had two sons. I never met them in person. But I'm sure Mr. and Ms. Jones thought that their kids would get their house and their possessions, you know, all these belongings that they accumulated for themselves over the years. By the time I came along to work on the house, Mr. Jones had died. And Mrs. Jones was an older woman. She was in need of care. And you can either have somebody move into the house and care for her, or you can put her in an assisted living facility where she has constant access to care. And so they had decided to do that. The sons had decided we'll put her in assisted living. And they're going to sell the house, is what they're going to do. And so who's going to get these things that Mr. and Ms. Jones have prepared, you know, throughout life? Well, I can tell you that nursing home's going to get a lot of it. That's who's going to get a lot of it. And I don't know, you know, I've never met Mr. and Ms. Jones. I don't know what kind of conversations they had, but I'm sure they thought, well, you know, everything we've got is going to go to our two sons. You didn't count on that nursing home getting a good portion of it, but they're sure going to. You know, that's not cheap. And Ms. Jones is needing these things that she's prepared to see her through the remainder of her life here. But what about the rest? I wonder if they had conversations about the rest of this stuff. Well, Matthew chapter 6 and verse 19 will start. "Do not lay up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust destroy and where thieves break in and steal." All right, let me tell you a little bit about my job, mostly what I do now. I get realtors call me and say, "Hey, Al, we've sold a house, and there's a checklist of things to do. You know, the plumbing leaks here, the electrical needs to be brought up to code, there's a leak in the ceiling, there's a hole in the sheetrock, and somebody's got to touch up the paint." So I can call five different guys, or I can call Al and Matt, and they come out and they fix all the, you know, all five things on the checklist. So usually when I get to a home, it's empty. The house has already been sold, it's pending a closing and these repairs, and so it's empty. I go in, I do the repairs, Matt and I do, and then we leave, the house closes. It works out really nice for me because the seller's happy because the house sold, and the buyer's happy because they bought a house, and I get a check from a lawyer at a closing, which is as close as you can get to guaranteed money. So everybody is happy in the situation. So that's usually what I do. But to be clear, what I do is I make a living fixing the rust. And Jesus says, don't lay up for yourself treasures on earth because they don't last. Matt and I are out there fixing the rust, and all of these building materials break down over time. You know, heat and cold cause expansion and contraction. Rain, wind cause damage. And over time, a house needs repairs. And this house on Arlington Road, it had about $8,000 worth of repairs that needed to be done. Now, for our young people, don't think I make $8,000, okay? Because I don't. So I've got to pay for insurances and licenses and taxes, and I got to pay for the materials, and I got to pay for the guys who work on that. But you can see this inheritance is already starting to go a lot of different ways, isn't it?
And $8,000, I'll pay you something. $4,000 of it, they wouldn't have to pay if they cleaned their gutters. If you got gutters on your house, you go home and clean those things, or pay one of these young people at church to climb a ladder and clean those gutters out. Because water will do damage. It destroys. It creates rust. It creates decay. That's the very thing Jesus said. This is the problem with these things. Don't put your hope and confidence in these things because they don't last. That's the point he's trying to make. And where thieves break in and steal. So, what was different about this house on Arlington Road, and it's something we hadn't encountered before, the realtor calls me and says, hey, I need you to do these repairs. No one lives in the home, but everything is still there. All the possessions are still there. And she said, and the estate company is going to come in, and there's going to be an estate sale. Now, I'm not familiar with estate sales. Some of you may have gone to an estate sale before. So it's kind of like an in-house yard sale. So this estate company comes in, and everything that's in the house, they're putting stickers on. This is how much it's valued at. And the sale starts on Thursday of the week, and people come in on Thursday, and Friday, and Saturday, and Sunday is the last day of the sale, and buy everything out of the house. So here's Mr. and Miss Jones' house. You know, I'm sure they thought their kids would want all this stuff. Kids didn't want the stuff. Kids called the estate company. Sell everything out of the house. Just get what you can get out of it. You know, think about all the stuff in your house and somebody comes in and they're putting labels on it. This is how much it costs. You know, the estate company had a key. I had a key. So the estate company, they didn't break into the house. Like Jesus says, thieves break in and steal. But I can tell you, they did steal. They took stuff out of that house. Because I watched. We're sitting there working. And there's a lot of stuff that was, you know, newspapers and magazines and trash. It was trash. And they would load it up in garbage bags and take it out to the road for the garbage company to pick it up. But I also noticed that they had some of these black, like the hefty bags. Yeah, the garbage bags, you couldn't see what was in them, but they were putting some of those bags in their cars. That's tomorrow's garbage day at my house, and I'll take the garbage out tonight, but I won't put it in the car because garbage doesn't go in the car. So whatever they're putting in that car is worth something to them. So, you know, finally curiosity gets the better of me. And one of the guys has taken out one of these bags, and he puts it in his car. And so I just asked, I said, hey, what's in that bag? You know, and he said, this is stuff that we couldn't sell, but nobody would want it, but we take it. I said, oh, okay, like what? Now you really got me curious. Like what? And he said, well, like paper towels and toilet paper and canned food. I thought, okay, well, I actually wouldn't have thought about that. Nobody's probably going to come in and buy paper towels and toilet paper and stuff, but that stuff could still be used, and canned food doesn't go bad. I said, okay. So, I mean, that answer satisfied me. I'm not Joseph. I'm not opening up people's bags, going through it, trying to figure out what they're taking. So, this is what they're taking out of the house. So, when I ask him what's in his garbage bag, this is his answer. Right? It's toiletries, that kind of stuff. So, they're taking stuff out of the house. Well, I'm sure when Mr. and Ms. Jones had their conversation about who's going to get what, they didn't think about people just taking stuff out of the house. But Jesus did. When he says, don't have confidence in these things because they don't last and people steal them, that's exactly what he's talking about. So what's the real value of things? You know, if they're going around putting the labels on stuff, my job is to fix the rust. Their job is to assess what's the value of something. Now, there's a verse that's kind of scary in Mark chapter 8, verses 36 and 37. And we'll read this and then we'll come back and comment on it in a few minutes. What good is it for someone to gain the whole world, yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? What's the soul worth? What's its value? Well, the value of anything is what you can sell it for. That's what it's worth. So the estate company is putting this value on things because they value what they can sell it for. So what was interesting to me is over in the corner, because some of the stuff I'm repairing is inside, so I'm inside with them. But over in the corner, there's this cardboard box, kind of large cardboard box. And the plaques and the trophies and the awards and the medals and the photographs just get thrown in the cardboard box. And so, you know, I asked the kid again, hey, what is that? He said, this is the stuff that isn't worth anything. He said, I can't throw it away because the family might want it. He's like, but I can't sell this. It's not worth anything. And so I'm sitting there looking at the awards and the trophies, you know. Employee of the Year, 1996. Not worth anything. And I think, what did that mean to that person, though? This thing that you're saying is worthless is not worth anything. That he traded a year of his life and maybe overtime, and maybe holidays, and maybe had to bring his work home with him, and he missed time with his spouse, and he missed time with his kids, and he missed time with his friends, and he missed time at church. And at the end of it, you get this marble plaque, you know, or maybe it's wood or whatever, and it has an inscription on it, Employee of the Year, and you think, wow, look what I've accomplished. I've really got something now. And so you put this on the wall, or maybe put it on the mantle, or maybe you have like a display case, as I've seen in some houses before, where you have all the trophies that you've accumulated in life, and say, look what I did. Look what I accomplished. So you traded all of those things, all that time and effort and money, to get this plaque that the estate company says is worth nothing. And yet, the can of SpaghettiOs goes in the kid's car. $1 at Publix. This is worth something. This is lunch. That year of that man's life that he traded away to get that plaque, it's not worth anything. That plaque's not worth anything. And so sometimes in life when we're looking at these things asking, you know, what is the value of something? What is it worth? Well, it's worth whatever we trade to get it. All the time and effort and money that we spend or give or trade to get something, that's what it's worth. But not only that, it's worth more than whatever we took that time and effort and money away from to get. And so when Jesus asked the question, what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? I don't know, but they overpaid. They overpaid. You know, and probably if we looked around our house, there's some things we overpaid on. We thought, oh, I really need that. And then we get it and we don't really use it. We've overpaid. What would anyone give in exchange for the soul? I don't know if they overpaid. And if that's me or you, we vastly overpaid. We gave more than it was worth. Some other things were taken too, not just the SpaghettiOs. And for the record, these are Cal's SpaghettiOs. I didn't actually take the SpaghettiOs from the house. Just, I want that to be on record. Some other things were taken too. So, I'm like anybody else who would have walked in the house and saw the price tag on everything, or them putting the price tags on it. I kind of thought, would I want this or would I want that? Would it be worth it? So, I hope it's a number of years before I need a walking cane. But I had surgery a few years ago and I had to use one while I rehab. And my grandmother gave me one that was my granddad's cane when he was older. And it looked like an old man's cane. And so I told Matt, you know, when it gets time for me to carry a cane, I want to do it with style. I want something that looks nice, you know. So they had a Louisville Slugger baseball bat cane. I didn't even know there was such a thing. But it's a baseball bat and the end's curved like a cane. I thought, man, that's pretty neat. When it gets time for me to carry a cane, that's the cane I want. I want to do it with some flair. So I'm looking at this cane and it doesn't have a price tag on it. Well, it's kind of set off to the side, not with the other items for sale. And so I asked one of the employees, how much is the cane going to sell for? Now, Brooke's not going to let me bring that cane home now. I know it, but I'm curious how much it's going to sell for. And so they look it up and they say, well, the value of that cane is $75. So on the first day of the sale, Thursday, we start everything at a third of its value. That's how we price it. So you can buy it for $25 on Thursday. I mean, I like the cane, but I'm not giving $25 for that cane. But she said, now on Friday, it's 25% off of that, so it's only $18. Yeah. But on Saturday, it's half off of that, so it's only $9. And I thought, now we're getting into my price range. I might get $9 for that cane. But like, Sunday's the last day of the sale, and it's 75% off everything. But if you come in here with a penny and nobody else has bought it, we'll sell it to you for a penny. I'd give a penny for that thing. It was worth that. The estate company gets half of that. If they sold that cane for 2 cents, they get one of it. So you think about everything in the house that's being sold, everything that Mr. and Mrs. Jones have accumulated over time that they think is going to their kids, and the kids, you know, brought in the estate company, and the estate company's selling it, whatever they get in the sale, the estate company takes half. But that cane didn't make it to that sale. Not because I bought it. By the time I got, you know, finished with my work, I kind of looked around. Where's the cane? I didn't see that cane. I don't think it made it to the sale. I think it was in one of those black bags that got taken to the car. And so when Jesus says, this is what happens when you put confidence in worldly things, it's not a good system. It's not a good investment. It's a vanishing inheritance. You know, riches can disappear at any time. Proverbs 23 and verse 5, cast but a glance at riches and they are gone, for they will surely sprout wings and fly off to the sky like an eagle. Think about what's going on with this house that I'm at. You got legal costs, you got repairs, you got real estate costs, you got nursing home costs, you got estate sale costs, you got people stealing stuff. So there's not a whole lot left. And then that's going to be divided in two between these two sons. Now maybe this is the part you wouldn't be expecting. Those two sons didn't care. They didn't want it. They didn't want it. I had a conversation with one of them. It was probably 90 seconds when I was talking about doing the work on the house. His house is in Athens, Alabama. He says, I don't live in Athens, Alabama. I live in Atlanta, Georgia. And my brother lives, I can't remember, it was Pittsburgh or somewhere. He said, I'm not coming to town. I'm not coming to that house. I'm not going through those things. He said, I'm making one trip. He said, I'm showing up the day of the closing. I'm getting a check from the real estate company. I'm getting a check from whatever the estate company gives me. And I'm going back home. I've got my own house. I've got my own things. And so I'm sitting there thinking about my own life. Here, Brooke and I, making this will out. Here's the things that we've accumulated in life. And surely Cal's going to want this, and surely Olivia's going to want that. And you may have had the same conversation. You know, surely my kids, I work so hard. This means so much to me, and I'll give this to them. And your kids may not care a thing in the world about all these things you work for. And we traded away money and time and effort, and maybe we did it saying, oh, this is for them, and they don't even care. You know, you think about kids with trophies, Little League trophies. By the time they get to college, they don't pack up that and take it to college with them. They don't care about it. They've moved past that in life. And by the time they would inherit a lot of things that we would hand off to them, they've got those already for themselves. They've moved past the time of needing them. And they just don't care. And these two sons, they didn't care at all. And there's probably some things that I think, oh, my kids would love to have that they do not want, that they don't want in their house. And so, this is another problem with this inheritance. It's false confidence. That's what we really think we're passing off, is this confidence that I'm going to pass these things to my kids and it's going to make their lives better. That's the reason we save up for these things. Proverbs 18, verse 10. The name of the Lord is a fortified tower. The righteous run to it and are safe. The wealth of the rich is their fortified city. They imagine it a wall too high to scale. We got trust. I'm going to pass off this wealth, and because my kids have a little bit of inheritance, they're better protected from bad things happening in life because they've got some money. And so maybe we put confidence in it, and we're putting confidence in the wrong thing. You know, Solomon passes off an inheritance to Rehoboam. And you talk about somebody who had a lot. He didn't have a fortified city. He had a kingdom. A kingdom. And here he dies at 1 Kings chapter 11, the end of the chapter, he dies. In 15 verses into chapter 12, that kingdom is split. I'm sure he thought he was handing off something great. Here's the entire kingdom, son. It doesn't last. It disappears. And so if Solomon can hand over an entire kingdom, the person who writes these very things about, you know, imagining this is a wall too high to scale, what am I handing off? Do I think I can outdo that? Do I think I'm going to put my confidence in my money and that's really going to take care of my kids? Go back to the reading that we had. We read verse 20 and then we'll go back to verse 21. This is how it would be with whoever stores up things for themselves, but is not rich towards God. but is not rich towards God. The problem is not saving things or accumulating things or working for things. The problem is putting confidence in these things and not having confidence in God, not being rich towards God. Riches don't last. That's the point Jesus is trying to make to us, and as he created all these things, he ought to know that they don't last. They weren't designed to last. 1 John chapter 2, verse 17, "And the world is passing away, and all of the things in the world are passing away." Riches don't last, but they also cannot save, which is what's important to us. That's the reason we're here this morning. We understand that. Proverbs 11, verse 4, "Riches do not profit in the day of wrath." You know, we put confidence in something that cannot save us. If we put confidence in riches, that's what we've done. We put confidence in something that cannot save us. We talked about this a little bit in class this morning, the desires of our heart. What is our desire? We'll go back to Matthew chapter 6 now and read a few more verses. We read verse 19, we'll go to verse 20. "But lay up for yourselves treasures in heaven, where neither moth nor rust destroys, and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, there your heart will be also." The Living Translation says, "Where your treasure is, there the desires of your heart will be also." It's what are we longing to do? Where are we longing to be? That's what we're putting our confidence in. That's what we're striving for. Who controls your life? Maybe I should say, what controls your life? Skipping down to verse 24, "No one can serve two masters, for you will either hate one and love the other, you will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve God," and I like this translation, "and be enslaved to money." Enslaved. Is there anything wrong with money? No. But what is a blessing to some is a trap to others. You know, some people can't handle the blessing of wealth. They can't do it. Money, wealth, riches, I'm going to compare it to fire, is what I'm going to compare it to. So a couple of Christmases ago, I got a smoker. And, you know, the way the smoker works is you put your wood in the bottom and you start the fire. And then you control the temperature by how much airflow you let go across the fire. So if you let more air go across the fire, then the fire gets hotter, burns, you know, larger, and heats up the smoker more. Or you can, you know, dial down the oxygen and it gets cooler. So you control the fire. And you use the fire to smoke chicken or whatever it is that you like to cook. And so it's a useful tool. The fire is a useful tool. And I like to be outside, you know, working with my smoker, and the kids are sitting there riding their bikes or playing on the trampoline or something. And it's fun, but I tell you what, I don't let the kids get near it. Because what is a useful tool for cooking our dinner would burn them and hurt them terribly. And I don't let them play with matches, because they burn the house down and kill themselves. And that's exactly what happens with money. Something that can be a helpful tool to some and do a lot of good can destroy somebody else who's immature, who doesn't know how to handle it. It did the rich young ruler. It's what kept him from Christ. Luke chapter 18, verse 22, starting. "So when Jesus heard these things, he said to him, 'You still lack one thing. Sell all that you have and distribute to the poor. You will have treasure in heaven, and come follow me.' But when he heard this, he became very sorrowful, for he was very rich." You know, the rich young ruler didn't possess his wealth. His wealth possessed him. He wasn't the boss. He wasn't in charge. It was in charge. It determined his actions. It determined his thoughts. It controlled him. As we conclude this morning, you know, there are a lot of things in life that are bought and sold. You know, just like all these things I talked about in the estate sale, just like that home, it's like a lot of things I have and a lot of things you have. You know, we buy and sell things sometimes on Facebook. There's a little icon at the bottom called Marketplace on Facebook, and you get some really good deals on there. I haven't found the baseball bat cane yet, but there are some nice things on there. There are a lot of things that are bought and sold. You know, but there's one thing that shouldn't be sold, and that's the truth. And unfortunately, that's what happens sometimes. People get the truth and say, this isn't really worth as much as something else. So we trade the truth for something of a lot less value. Proverbs 23:23, "Buy the truth and do not sell it. Also wisdom and instruction and understanding." You know, God's word is a treasure. It's an eternal investment, and it leads to an eternal inheritance. It's been prepared for us. 1 Peter chapter 1, verses 3 through 4. This is the last passage we'll look at this morning. Blessed be the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who according to His abundant mercy has begotten us again to a living hope through the resurrection of Jesus Christ from the dead, to an inheritance incorruptible and undefiled that does not fade away, reserved in heaven for you. It's reserved for us. Nothing's going to happen to it. No one's going to get it. That's the inheritance. I appreciate your attention this morning. If you would, take out the songbook and we'll turn to the song that's been selected. And this hasn't been a lesson to tell one what's due to become a Christian, but if you're here this morning and you'd like to become a Christian, repent of your sins, confess the name of Jesus, and have your sins washed away in baptism, if we can help you with that or anything else, we invite you to come while we stand and sing.